The Original Place. Chapter 1. The Dreams of a Boy. This is going to be an interesting one to try and capture, as it's so ethereal, yet so deeply integral to who I am, to what I've become. At various moments in my life, it's felt as if I've touched something deeper than the reality I see and tangibly interact with around me. That something or someone else is known here, something unknown in any other moment of my life. How to explain this? There are actually historical moments in my past where it has felt as if, through no control of my own, I've stumbled up against a section of reality that's thinner than it was at almost every other moment I've lived. It's as if there is a veil between this world and somewhere else, as if the mirror of this life does in fact have two sides, that this place here is inside this mirror to some lesser or greater extent. That in this other place, or should I say the original place, from which we all once came, the sun's warmth is more than it could ever be here, that the sky is a deeper and more radiant blue than we've ever known, and that reality is fully real, not merely corporeal or transposed, but first, original and whole. Let's stretch this analogy one step further and then press on. It's as if the light from the original place, full and complete in its perfection, has refracted upon hitting this mirror, upon coming through to here, so that for us, those living on the inside, these refractions succumb to the broken horror we often accept without question, and yet these rays still point to something from beyond. So now faith, hope, and love abide. These three things, but the greatest of these is love. 1 Corinthians 13:3, taken from the ESV. Chapter 2, Faith. These moments have happened without warning. I remember standing on a field playing cricket in year 5 at primary school and knowing a sense of love so fully that when I think about what I now feel for my wife and our two children, I look to that for direction and reference. I was 10 or 11 at the time, yet it utterly shattered me in a single fleeting moment. I came up against something at that moment and forever changed. I think it was real because it felt more real than anything before. I hold a faith in these moments, because these moments have changed me and the way I view this world. They tell me that there is more at play than meets the eye, and that the other side of the mirror boasts a perfection and the completion of everything we are and experience here and now. It very rarely happens, but sometimes, when I'm out amongst the hills and history here in the colder valley where I live, it's almost as if I hear music up there, high up upon the wind. It's fleeting, and yet it serves to pull my mind back to something that isn't known in the classic sense of the word right now. The strings I hear, the song it commands, it is echoed in texts I've since stumbled upon in my reading. Take chapter 7 of The Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham, The Piper at the Gates of Dawn, as our example. A truly magical moment happens here, full of myth, hope, and the bending of the now to point towards something that is admitted by all to be more real than the reality of all their previous now moments. Yet it's so easily forgotten, swept past and brushed aside. Mole and Ratty quickly move on. The story concludes and we review the novel not with a mysterious moment in the reeds when they met the Piper at the Gates of Dawn, but rather with the retaking of Toad Hall. Yet I would argue that this chapter in The Wind in the Willows is by far the most important. I would argue that these moments, when they take place in our own lives, are also the most important. not because they are unexplainable, as I'm showing now by trying horribly to describe them, but because they fundamentally change who we are as we come face to face for a fleeting moment with something more real than our reality and sense that this presence actually knows our name. Chapter 3. Hope. Come on, Sam. You're claiming that an emotional tug through fleeting moments can point to something beyond the here and now, something further on than this world we know and touch each and every day. Are you really claiming the unknowable through emotional sways and putting it forward as evidence for something more? To answer honestly, yes. Yes, I think I am. When I've reached my lowest, and have barely managed to refrain from succumbing to the deafening scream that demands the end of my life, as I weep within the pit of despair and depression that I've been subjugated to for many years at a time, it is here, in the absolute horror of nihilism, that I half remember the music of a song I once knew. The veil is thinner here, and it's here that the hairs on my arms and neck begin to rise, as I remember the warmth of a sunlight known, but from which I had no recollection mere moments ago. Let us get down to brass tacks and talk about hope in the face of utter despair. I've seen final goodbyes, when a body riddled with cancer can go no further. I've seen lifelong lovers together at the end, hands held tight, breath coming in ragged gasps. I've seen the pain of having to let go of a hand no longer responding, a hand they've known for their forever, as their world breaks into an innumerable multitude of fractured shards. I've seen the pain, grief, and utter horror, and yet I've also heard the whispering of half goodbyes. I wonder if these moments are an end, but not finality, for I think we are so much more than material axioms, that the knowledge we all hold to when the terror in the night truly comes, is that hope is a person, and that it is him, rather than ourselves, who truly owns our name. That there is a final act after our perceived curtain call, when the song we've been dreaming about for all of our yesterdays suddenly becomes today, when the warm rays of the sun will kiss our skin, when the face we've always known in half-glimpsed remembering says, "Welcome, child," and we realize the warmth of his voice is light itself, restoring everything utterly and irrevocably. You see, I think, at the deepest level of who I am, that hope screams of this from within me. That my eyes can't see it, and my brain can't fathom it, but that this reality isn't it. That this experience today is naught but a passing of shadow and light upon a mirror sustained by the original place, and that everything within me longs to enter and to become fully whole. I seem to hold a hope in the redemption of everything. That the crumbling walls of this world we live within will once again form the bedrock of a castle we were always meant to dwell in, and yet somewhere along the path we utterly lost our way. Chapter 4. Love. As I've already mentioned, at various moments in my life, it has felt as if I've touched something deeper than the reality I see and tangibly interact with around me. That something or someone else is known here, something unknown in any other moment of my life. There are moments when I see it more clearly than others. When the light cuts through the full summer leaves overhead and dapples its presence upon the ground ahead of where I'm walking. When I hold either of my children's hands and they utterly trust me for everything, throwing anxiety to the wind and allowing Daddy to walk them home. When I held a patient's hand and head as she drew so very close to the end, she had no idea of my presence, yet we both felt another within her room, bidding her on, behind the stage of this life and further up. It is said that there is no greater love than this, to lay down one's life for the life of a friend. I wonder if the oldest of our stories, the half-whispered dream since the dawn of mankind, is in fact true. That utter love, named and known, had always planned to give it all, to redeem it all. That we hear this upon the breeze, a song more real than anything we could possibly comprehend, known in that moment and then forgotten, almost, but not utterly, once it has passed us by.